All right. Welcome, everybody. Tonight we are discussing this week's Parsha, Parsha's Bechukotai, and the title of the class is When Phoebe Rebuked Rachel About Ross. So, everybody, we're going back to our Friends days. I don't know how many seasons did Friends have. I don't know, like 15? I don't know. It seemed like forever. So, and lives on eternally on all the streaming services. So, This is a clip, pause a clip, that discusses the on again, off again relationship between Rachel and Ross, and this time Ross is going to marry Emily, and conflict ensues. So let's go to the videotape.
The vacuum, it's in my closet on the left-hand side. The garbage bags are next to the refrigerator.
Okay, but Rachel's going to be here, too. Can I just ask her this stuff?
Yeah, okay. Give that a try.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, cheerio.
London, baby.
Okay, because that's not going to get annoying.
London, baby.
You know what? I was wrong.
Well, we're all here. I guess we should get going. So, we're off.
Have fun.
Thanks.
Oh.
I can't believe you're not going to be there.
Oh, I know.
So, come. Why don't you come?
What?
To London. Come to London, please. Oh. It would mean so much to me.
Yeah, but I got to work. I'm sorry.
Oh, why can't you take a couple of days off?
Because I can't, Ross. I told you. No, I can't.
This is my wedding.
All right, you know what? Now we really are late. Let's go, let's go, let's go!
Fine, you'll watch it on video when we get back.
Let's go. Bye, Phoebe.
Bye,
Phoebe.
Bye.
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 London, baby.
So what do you want for lunch?
Oh, I don't know. I guess we have to eat.
Yeah, I do.
What's the matter? I'm just bummed the way I left things with Ross. Wish I didn't lie to him about having to work. He seems so mad at me.
Don't be so hard on yourself. Someone I was still in love with was getting married.
Still in love with?
Yeah.
I'm not in love with Ross.
Oh. No. Good. Yeah, me neither.
Phoebe, I'm not going to Ross's wedding because he's my ex-boyfriend, and that would be really uncomfortable. Not because I'm still in love with him. I mean, hey, you know, I like Ross as much as the next guy. You know, clearly I have feelings for him, but feelings don't mean love. You know, I mean, I still have loving feelings for Ross, you know. Yeah! But I have continuing feelings of love, but that doesn't mean that I'm still in love with him. You know, I mean, I have sexual feelings for him, but I do love him. Oh, my God. Why didn't you tell me?
We thought you knew.
We?
Yeah, we all know. We talk about it all the time.
You all know? Does Ross know?
Oh, no. Ross doesn't know anything.
Oh, I cannot believe you didn't tell me.
Because we thought you knew. It's so obvious. God, it would be like, you know, telling Monica, hey, you know, you like things clean. And under the sink. Why?
Because I'm going to London.
What? What do you mean you're going to London?
Yeah, I have to tell Ross that I love him. Now, honey, you take care and you don't have those babies till I get back.
Rachel, you can't go. Ross loves Emily.
Yeah, I know he does. But I have to tell him how I feel. He deserves to have all of the information, and then he can make an informed decision.
That's not why you're going. You're going because you hope he's going to say, yeah, I love you too, Rach. Forget about that British chippy.
Do you think he will?
No, because he's in love with the British chippy. But, Rachel, if you go, you're just going to mess with his head and ruin his wedding. You know, it's too late. You missed your chance. I'm sorry. I know this must be really hard. It's over.
You know what? No, it's not over until someone says I do. I do! I do! I do! I do! Oh. Yeah, like I can really chase you. I'm carrying a litter.
All right, classic. It's a good show, Friends. Got some good stuff there. They're good actors. Anyways, all right, so okay, obviously what's gotta do with the Parsha? All right, good question. All right, let's go to the sheet. Okay, Ross is going to marry Emily. Rachel, his ex-girlfriend, is not going to the wedding in London, despite Ross' request to join. What feelings do you think Ross's marriage stirred up in Rachel?
Envy?
Yes. And?
Jealousy? Love?
Envy and jealousy, yeah, yes. And what does she realize?
That she's, you know, willing to admit that she still has feelings for him,
right? This is the last chance. If she doesn't make a move now, it's a game over. So she has to. Before she was ambivalent, so now if she doesn't step up in her mind, it's going to be all over. So. Question number two, why did Phoebe not call out Rachel initially about her real feelings for Ross? There's a reason that she said, and there's probably the real reason. Why didn't she tell, Rachel, hey, you know, you still love Ross. Why didn't she never said that? Why don't friends tell other friends things which are oftentimes, why do friends oftentimes are hesitant to share important information with their friends? So like, why didn't she say it?
Want to hurt her feelings?
Yeah, she didn't want to hurt her feelings, you know, or is already Ross has apparently moved on. Now, those who know the entire series, he, of course, did not. But that, you know, we're not going to go into the whole Friends enterprise. But the bottom line is Phoebe says she covered for herself by saying, well, we thought you knew. We don't have to say the obvious. But the reality is you don't want to say something which is that could be hurtful or painful or. You don't feel a person be able to handle information, so you don't say. And then when Phoebe did step up and say, you know, don't go, this is a bad idea, was Rachel receptive to the idea?
No.
No. She said, I'm going to London, I'm going to tell them how I feel, and that's it. Okay. Now, okay, obviously one part of this is, you know, an exaggerated situation of a TV show, but amongst our friends do things that we caution them not to do, but they do it anyways, you know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, some people have to learn through the hard way. So, which gets to our key question of the night is, why is it difficult to correct or rebuke a friend? This is a key question. Why is it difficult to correct or rebuke a friend?
Because you care about them.
So, but isn't correcting them helping them?
You don't want to hurt the relationship.
Oh, so it's not about them. It's about you.
But supposedly it's that if you really cared about them, then you would tell them.
Right.
Right. So why do people not do it?
Some people just don't want to... You know, it's some people like to avoid conflict, I guess.
All right, so there's a general thing that people are conflict avoiders. That's one problem. What's the other problem? But what really is the reason why they're not telling them something that they need to know?
it's difficult. And even if you have a conversation, they often don't listen.
True and true. But what is the downside if it doesn't go well?
You lose the friendship.
There you go. So the person makes the following calculation. I'm not sure I can actually get through the person. Number one, if they take it the wrong way, then they're going to sort of like basically break up with me. And now I've lost it. So I did not help the person, A. And B, I now lost a good friend. And good friends are hard to come by. So that's the challenge. You know what I'm saying? So the question is, should you offer constructive criticism to a friend? What do you say?
Yes.
Well, I would say it kind of depends based upon what you were saying earlier, Julie, which is that you have to make a really honest calculation. Is there anything that, do I have the influence? Do I have the skill to be able to communicate something to them which they will find difficult or hurtful or challenging in a way that I'll be able to accomplish two goals? A, they'll hear it and be improved by it, and that we won't blow up the relationship. But if you don't, but on the other hand, if you know you can't get through to them, because let's say people are, sometimes everybody in a relationship knows that there's nothing I could say that they're going to hear. They just can't hear it. They have to learn it themselves. The Ram expresses the phrase that a chacham, a wise person, does not say anything that cannot be heard. If you now that's where you got to be really honest. This is where you got to be honest. If you are 100% sure that they cannot take your rebuke or correction, then you don't say anything. But if you feel that you have the trust, you have the relationship, you have the influence, and it's something which is important that needs to be corrected and helped out, well, then you should do it. You know what I'm saying? That's the equation. And that's a very, now most people don't like doing this because they don't want to risk, for them, many people, the friendship is not about the person, it's about themselves. So they enjoy being friends with this person, so they don't want to lose it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's the deal. So now let's keep on going. Now, as a opening two verses, there's two psukim in Mishlei, in Proverbs, that sort of paint the picture of our approach to rebuke or criticism. Pasuk says, do not reject discipline, which is Musar, of Hashem, my son. Do not abhor, do not hate his rebuke, his tochacha. For whom the Lord loves, he rebukes, as a father, the son whom he favors. Which means that there are parts of the Torah, specifically we're going to get to this week, where Hashem criticizes the Jewish people, rebukes the Jewish people, gives Musar to the Jewish people, typically through his prophets. And it's very hard to hear. But what is it? But really, it's a measurement. The fact that God is trying to help us is a measurement that he loves the Jewish people. He loves us. That's why he's correcting. Somebody that you don't love, you don't care. And if you want to make that mistake, fine. A parent, he uses the metaphor of the parent. The parent cares about the child, wants the child to be successful in life. And therefore, if they see they're doing something wrong, will rebuke, will criticize, will critique the child's behavior, because they know that the child's future is dependent upon them being trained properly. So Hashem is like a parent in the sense that he loves us, he wants the best for us, and therefore, if he gives us rebuke and criticism, it's really for our benefit, even if it's initially painful. You know what I'm saying? So Hashem is viewed as a father who rebukes his beloved son. Why are we cautioned to love tocha, to love rebuke? Why do we want to Why should a person be open and love rebuke?
Because it helps us learn and grow.
That's it. Even though it's painful. So let me give you a number of examples. Let's say you hire a personal trainer. Okay. And the personal trainer is working with you in the gym, and they're being a little aggressive and saying, you know, I got to improve your form, you know, arms up, legs down, you know, whatever. If anybody watched a person doing a train, look, they try to be nice, but they're trying to really improve you. So sometimes they can use a little bit of a harsh language, or certainly classically a coach of a baseball, football, basketball team will rather be, shall we say, a little animated about his players. Now, he really wants them to be successful. A parent, you know, you might see a parent scream at a child who's about to run out into the street because he might get run over. So he's doing it because he loves the child. And the child has to accept that because they want to be the best. Conversely, our friends, we want to be the person. You want to be in a friendship that you have signaled to them that you are okay with them calling you out on your stuff. And the question is, you have to ask yourself, are you that person? Are you that person that has created in the relationship a sense of safety where they could be open and honest with you and tell you where you are perhaps making mistakes? That's the question. Or do they feel that, oh, if I talk to them and I say any kind of critique, they're going to run away? That's the Shiloh. That's a question for to think about. Now, keep on going. So we get to this parsha. All right, Julie, can you read?
Yeah.
All right. This is this week's parsha. Im b'chuko taitelechu. Now we have English. 26:3.
If you follow my laws and are careful to keep my commandments, I will provide you with rain at the right times, so that the land will bear its crops and the trees of a field will provide fruit. You will have so much that your threshing season will last until your grape harvest, and your grape harvest will last until the time you plant. You will have your fill of food, and you will live securely in the land. I will grant peace in the land so that you will sleep without fear. I will rid the land of dangerous animals, and the sword will not pass through your land. You will chase away your enemies, and they will fall before your sword. Five of you will be able to chase away 100, and 100 of you will defeat 10,000 as your enemies fall before the sword. I will turn to you, make you fertile and numerous, thus keeping my covenant with you. You will continue eating the previous year's crops long after their time, and you will eventually have to clear out the old crops because of the new. I will keep my sanctuary in your midst and not grow tired of you. I will make my presence felt among you. Thus I will be a God to you, and you will be a nation dedicated to me. I am God your Lord. I brought you out of Egypt where you were slaves. I broke the bands of your yoke and led you forth with your heads held high.
Okay. So here, Hashem is speaking through Moshe to Jewish people and saying, you're going to go in the land. And if you follow the Torah, the Torah, the mitzvot, what is Hashem promising? Number one, you're going to have rain in your time because Israel is dependent upon rainfall. So you'll have crops. So then you're going to have crops and you'll have fruit. And you're going to have so much that the threshing season will last to your grape harvest. So basically, you're going to have such an overwhelming harvesting. And you're going to have a fill of food. And you're going to live, and then you're going to have security. Right, right now in Israel, does the people of Israel have security?
They do. I mean,
they have security, but it is constantly challenged. They've had many terrorist attacks in the last couple of months. There've been a number of people that have been killed, minding their own business, being shopping or whatever, and then people doing these terrorist attacks. So this blessing has not, shall we say, has not been realized. And I'll grant peace in your land, so you'll sleep without fear. Right now, Israel has to spend enormous amount of its GDP on its on its Army, Air Force, you know, Marines and Special Forces to keep all the enemies at bay. If their Israeli, if the Army would suddenly, you know, take a break, they would get overrun. You know what I'm saying? So this blessing of grant peace in your lands, you'll sleep without fear, which is a tremendous blessing. Right now in America, America has this blessing. America has full sovereignty. You're not worried. I mean, I'm not saying every state and every neighborhood, but most of 99% of America go to sleep at night, are not worried that they're going to be invaded by marauders. I'm not saying there's no crime, but I'm just saying that it's a good situation. And then Hashem says, I'm going to rid the land of dangerous animals. Your sword will not pass through your land. So Israel, as you know, separates Africa and Asia. So it's by naturally a land bridge. We went with Rabbi Liebtag, talked about that being the sort of the doorway to the world over here, the doorway between Europe, Asia, and Africa. So by definition, there's always going to be armies wanting to go through Israel to get to the other land. Okay, and Hashem said, oh, you'll chase away your enemies, they'll fall, you'll basically be undefeated. 5 of you will be able to chase away 100, 100 will be able to defeat 10,000 as your enemies fall before your sword. In order, you can have tremendous military success, and you're going to be fertile and numerous, and you're going to have, and then you're going to have a relationship with Hashem. You're going to have the Beit HaMikdash. I'm going to not be tired of you. There'll be the Shekhinah there. And that's it. So that's really, this is like the Hashem is describing the Jewish state with full sovereignty, full financial success, full agricultural success, and which is instrumental to a nation which is which has a unique relationship with Hashem, with Torah and everything, and this is basically describing essentially the Messianic era, basically total bracha. So the partial was up. You do the Torah properly, you're promised total bracha, financial success, agricultural success, military success, religious success. Hashem has got your back. It's the ultimate picture, ultimate environment. There's two parts of the condition. Okay. Shane and I read this. This is called the Tocha, the punishment. And it goes on for like 60 verses. We're not going to read all 60 verses. But let's just read a couple just to get the couple things. Shane, again, take it away.
But this is what will happen if you do not listen to me and do not keep all these laws and commandments. If you come to denigrate my decrees and grow tired of my laws, then you will not keep all my commandments and you will have broken my covenant. I will then do the same to you. I will bring upon you feelings of anxiety along with depression and excitement, destroying your outlook and making life hopeless. You will plant your crop in vain because your enemies will eat it.
All right. So the Torah goes on for dozens and dozens of very harsh psukim detailing all the conceivable punishments, which mirror the blessings. In other words, instead of producing crops, you're going to grow a crop, but your enemy is going to harvest and eat it. Right now, that's literally happening to the people of Ukraine, where Russia has control. They're basically absconding with, you know, the silos, because as you know, that Ukraine is one of, I think, the number three or four grain producer in the world. And basically, the Russians are basically where they have control in the east. They're basically taking all their grain. They're stealing it. So here you're going to plant crops. They're going to have, and it goes on with all kinds of very dreadful consequences. Now, I just want to, you're going to be in a shul this week. You're going to see a couple of different customs. You may have, so there are three customs. Customs in Morocco and the Hasidic communities was to pay a person to get the Aliyah in advance. So the Aliyah, Elia, which talks about all the punishments and the harsh rebuke, apparently people didn't want that one. That was the Elia that, I'm going to pass on that one. So nobody would take the Elia. So in some communities, they had to pay people. Okay, number one. Some, I've seen this also, some communities don't even have a person say the blessing before and after. They just get the guy stands up there, but he doesn't make the bracha before and after. Okay, obviously that's just flat out wrong. Okay, it's not... This is not saying this is correct. This is just happening. We're just talking about what happens. Okay. In most places today, the extent of the practice of the Aliyah includes the Tocha, the rebuke, is given to the Baal Kriya, the person reading the Torah, or the rabbi, or to the Gabbai. I go to a Hashkam Minyan, a 7:30 davening on Shabbos morning. I happily volunteer for the Aliyah but the way that people, after I get the Aliyah, people feel like I'm taking one for the team. Like somehow all of these bad things are sticking to me and not sticking to them. All right. But meanwhile, the audience of the Tocha is the Jewish people. It's not against one person. Okay. Now, also, you'll see they'll read the Aliyah quickly and in a stage whisper. Okay. Just, you go to shul, watch for it. Okay. Now, is the Jewish community listening like Rachel's listening to the rebuke of Phoebe? Why or why not?
Well, we don't have a base on Migdash, so, and most of us live in the diaspora at this time, so it's just more difficult, maybe, to listen to the punishment for disobedience.
So are we like Rachel listening to rebuke, or are we not like Rachel? Did Rachel, back in the clip, did Rachel listen to Phoebe and not go to London, or did she not listen to Phoebe and go to London?
She went to London.
She had it both. She initially was angry. Phoebe, why don't you tell me? And then Phoebe tells to her straight. And what does she do? Now listen to her. It was like in the next conversation. So one could make the claim, the fact that the custom in most synagogues is to lower the volume and increase the pace indicates that people don't want to listen to the fact that there could be a punishment for the Jewish people not following the Torah. They don't want to hear it. Either pay somebody in order to outsource it, pay somebody to take the Aliyah, okay? B is say quickly and in a low tone, okay? So why is this happening? Why are people doing this way? It's a strange thing. First of all, is it...
Superstitious?
Okay, so number one is a superstition. Like, if anybody who gets the Aliyah will be what? Will get somehow get personally zapped by God. Is this behavior proper?
I mean, no. I mean, you haven't been zapped yet.
Right. So, is it because it's not true? What are we saying about God's Torah if we're asking the Baal Kriya to go real fast and real quiet? What are we really saying?
We're saying we don't want to hear this part. We're saying we don't want our flaws and our mistakes pointed out to us.
Right. In other words, like, this is a Torah story that we want, we'd like to hear, that we're going to give it a 5-star Yelp review. This is part of the Torah that we don't like that much. So we don't want to, we're going to turn down the volume and increase the speed. But that really is a degradation of the Torah. I'm being open.
So it's like saying, like, we like most of the Torah, just not this little bit.
Right. This part, which is a little harsh. It is harsh. If you read it in English, I didn't quote all 60 verses. Open up the Chumash and just read it out loud in a row, it will be emotionally hard to hear. I'm not saying it's not emotionally hard to hear. It's emotionally hard to hear. Okay? You should just try it. Just do a personal experiment. Just let it, and let it just sit in. It's, okay. So I think what Scott said is correct. Number one, there's a superstition that somehow we're going to get zapped if we hear it real loud, number one. Number two, there's a point, but ultimately it's a really, I think it's really a bizarion, a real degradation, because you're saying like, I don't, as Shana said, I don't like this part of the Torah. Turn it down and let's get through it. Okay. But Hashem gave us the whole Torah. You know, if he gave it to us, it's for a reason. So it's something that, part of Judaism is to be honest with ourselves and honest with our communities. And, you know, there's a lot about our communities, which is fantastic. And each community has many things which are exceptional and are special and are worthy of, of pride and celebration. But not everything. but not everything. And I'm just being honest with you that this is not our ability to accept rebuke when there's a part of the Torah called the rebuke and we don't want to listen to it. That's not a good sign. Okay, that's just bringing that to, and in a certain sense, we're all Rachel. We're upset when people don't tell us, and then when they tell us, we're not happy to hear it, and we're not going to listen to it. So that's why the clip that film was very meaningful. All right, now I want to move it from Hashem to the Jewish people to a practical exercise to interpersonal, Beit Adam L'Chaveiro. Okay, so let's.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Quick question first. Which Aliyah is the Tochacha?
I think it's Shlishi.
Okay. This was my bat mitzvah parsha. And growing up in a conservative shul, I was allowed to read from the Torah, and I took from Revi'i on. And wasn't, I guess this part about the customs of saying it softer and all the details of it weren't explained when you're a 13-year-old bat mitzvah.
Exactly. But the Tocha is very long. It's like 67 verses. It's long. All right, so Shana, continue on. Now there's a mitzvah to correct or rebuke somebody if they did something wrong to you. All right, Shana Bavakasha. This is from the Ram Mishnah Torah.
Laws of character traits. If one is sinned against by someone else, then one should not hate him secretly. For regarding wicked people, it says, and Absalom spoke neither good nor bad to his brother Amnon, for Absalom hated Amnon, from Shmuel. It is a commandment to make one's hatred known to the person who wronged one and to ask him why he did what he did and why he wronged one in the way that he did. For it is written, you shall definitely rebuke your fellow. If he requests forgiveness, one has to forgive him. One who forgives should not be too harsh, for it is written, so Abraham prayed to Hashem, and Hashem healed Abimelech, his wife and his maidservants, and they bore children.
So it's interesting. The Rambam brings, so the mitzvah is in Pemfarshas Kedoshim. The Hebrew is Hocheach. You shall surely rebuke your fellow Jew. Okay. And he brings two stories from the Tanakh. First one from the Navi. Avshalom is the son of David, King David. And Amnon is his brother. And Amnon raped Tamar, his sister. Which you can imagine that might be something that you would get upset about. But Avshalom didn't say a word. And he obviously, his hatred to him boiled. Ultimately, the story was that he set out a hitman to kill Amnon. Okay? All right, so if you don't deal with feelings of aggression, it doesn't tend to dissipate. It tends to fester and increase. That's the whole story in Shmuel Bet. Chapter 13. That's a great story to read if you ever want a great one. You know, go on to Sepharia, read that story. It's an amazing story. Now, but you're obligated to tell him that you wronged me and what you did and why he did it. Ask why he did it. Now, if the person requests forgiveness, now I would assume genuinely, you got to forgive them. And you, and forgiving one should not be too harsh. Now we have the other example of the positive one is that Avimelech, King Avimelech, the king of Gerar, as you know, took Avram's wife, Sarah, or Sarai at this point. And when he realized that, Hashem gave him a plague, and then he was upset, and then he returned Sarah to Avram, and also gave them various gifts, etc. But, and Avram prayed for Avshalom, Avimelech and his whole family that they should be healed by from their sickness, and ultimately it was a sickness that affected their private areas, obviously, and they were able to have children, which implies that beforehand they had an illness that prevented them from having children. Okay, so some sort of very painful situation there. So Avram was able to not only forgive Avimelech, but actually daven for his health and well-being, which is the ultimate example of forgiving somebody. That's why it's Avram. So that's the ultimate example. Now, how do you do this? The Ram gives at least five things. All right, keep on going there, Shana.
When rebuking someone, whether in matters between him and others, speak with him in private, quietly, softly, and make sure that he understands that one is speaking to him for his own benefit and thereby to bring him to life in the world to come.
Okay, so let's take them one at a time. Why is it important if you have an issue with somebody, if you felt insulted, embarrassed, injured by somebody, why must this meeting take place in private?
Because you can't embarrass somebody in public?
Yes. Number one is if there's any bit of an audience, even one more person, it'll be embarrassing, and and there's a prohibition of embarrassing a fellow Jew. Number one. What other reason? What other reason is there to have this meeting about correcting somebody's poor behavior to you in private? What happens when somebody else, let's say you're correcting a colleague at work and there's somebody else around?
They might chime in and give their 2 cents.
Okay, so somebody else might, you know, chime in. It will make an awkward situation even more awkward. What other is a problem?
It could lead to gossip, and it could affect the reputation of the person.
Right, the person's going to feel embarrassed, as you said, embarrassed, and therefore word's going to get out that he acted improperly. But also, how is the person going to be open to real admitting that they did something wrong when there's somebody else in the room? No, Shane is shaking her head. No, they're going to shut down and they're going to become defensive. So if you want to have the goal is not to rebuke them. The goal is to let them know that you did something. They did something wrong to you, to the degree that they recognize it and they apologize to you. Therefore, number one, you need to do this in private. Number two, you need to do it quietly. Why is the volume of your voice relevant?
When you speak quietly, you'll be heard, whereas opposed to if you're yelling at the person, again, they're going to shut down or not listen.
1,000%. If they feel that you're coming at them to yell at them, like, you know, how can you do this to me? And I thought you were a friend of mine and da-da-da-da-da-da. Already they're going to pull the wall, you know, the iron wall of resistance, and just the opposite, that will give them license to do what? To strike back. And the situation will what? Will get worse. So you got to speak in a quietly. Three, softly, which means not only in word choice. In other words, if you say, you know, Bob, you've been a real jerk. Even if you say that very quietly, you're not going to be successful. You know what I'm saying? So it's also the word choice, and you know, of which is a soft, non-confrontational. You're not coming in there as a prosecuting attorney. You know what I'm saying? So that's item number three. And here's the difficult one, that it's not about, the key thing is you need to make them feel it's not about yourself. It's about improving them. And it's not how you say, it's how you make them feel. And ultimately that they should be improved, their character, ultimately for the, they gain the world to come. Now, Dale Carnegie picks up in a similar way. He has 9 items of how to change people without giving offense or arousing resentment. So some of them are relevant and some are not. Number one is begin with praise and honest appreciation. So you might start with, Bob, you know, you're a good friend of mine. I love hanging out with you. Everybody enjoys you. Call attention to people's mistakes indirectly. You may not have noticed, but when we're at the dinner the other night, you shared a story, which I'm sure you thought was in good fun, about what I did at the fraternity when we were in college together. And it was embarrassing. I felt bad. And then you talk about your own mistake before criticizing others. And I know myself, I've done this myself, been not sensitive to the other person. And then you let the other person save face. That's the most critical thing. And say, you'll say, look, I know you meant no harm, but I want you to know that I felt bad. You know what I'm saying? This is not so relevant. And give other people a fine reputation to live up to. And Bob, you've always been a stellar person. Great guy. I'm sure not going to be a big deal to change. Whatever. There are ways to do it without in an indirect way, but without in feeling that you're indicting them. So we come to Scott Shapiro's favorite part of the program. We actually take these ideas into 3 scenarios. Scenario number 1, Stan Mgier went to a big Friday night dinner at a friend's house in the Upper West Side. His friend Steve was having a little too much wine. Steve shared an embarrassing story about Stan's college life. Stan was embarrassed as the table roared with laughter. What must Stan do? How should he do it using the Rambam and Dale Carnegie's advice? What must Stan do?
Just, I mean, wait until he's sober.
Okay, good. And... All right. That's an excellent word. The timing, you got it. Your goal is success. So obviously you want to get him in a time where he'll be successful. Obviously right then and there when he's still drunk is not helpful. What else?
Right.
What does Stan have to do?
Just be like, you know, college was fun. Those times were great, but that was a really embarrassing story.
Well, hold on. Break it through our things. Let's go through our various steps here. We have 5 steps here and 9 different elements with Dale Carnegie. What must Stan do with Steve? Number 1, what does he got to do? Which, by the way, most people do not do, by the way.
Call him?
He's got to reach out to him.
Right.
Either make a meeting or have a phone call. You've got to do it in private. Most people do not like to do this. Why would most people not want to have a conversation with their buddy Steve?
Because people don't like confrontation.
They don't like confrontation, and they're afraid if it does go bad, they're afraid that they're going to lose a relationship with Steve, and that might be even worse. But there's a mitzvah in Torah. One of the 613 mitzvot is if somebody has harmed you, done something to you, like this is embarrassing, as Julie pointed out, it is also prohibited in the same pasuk, the source, the biblical source, of embarrassing somebody. Not embarrassing somebody, even you're not allowed to embarrass somebody in private, and embarrassing somebody in public is such a terrible thing that you lose your portion of the world to come. So you got until they forgive you. So you got to make that right. You can't just say, I don't care. No, you got to call up Stan. Stan has to call up Steve. and talk to them about it. Next, how should the conversation go?
Calmly, don't jump down his throat.
Well, how does he open up the call? Let's role play. I'll be Steve. What? You be Stan. All right, I'm Steve.
You know, last
Hi, Stan.
Night
how really... are you? What's going on?
Hey, you may What's not have mind? Noticed, but that story you said was really embarrassing. Let's kind of just keep those stories between
on,
us.
Hold on. Should you just start with that? How about, how are you? How's, I mean, come on. You got to war. How about warming up the guy? How about, all right, you be Steve, I'll be Stan. Let's switch it. I'll be Stan. You'll be Steve. Ding, ding.
Hello. Oh,
Steve?
Can you call back in 5 minutes?
Okay, all right. Good. Right. Steve?
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Stan, so I'm Steve, it was so, did you have a great time Friday night? It was awesome.
Oh, so much fun.
It was great to see Shayna and Julie and all the gang. Food was amazing. And did you get a chance to enjoy some of that delicious Gush Etzion winery wine that Shayna brought back from Israel?
Oh my God, it's great. Loved it. Brought back so many good memories.
Delicious. Delicious. Notice we're getting in a good mood here. We're reconnecting. We're getting into the friend zone over here. Things are going well. So then I'll start off. Steve, I know you may not have noticed, and we're talking about so many different things, but you did happen to share the story about me at the fraternity doing the shots and what happened after that. And the truth is, you were there. I'm not saying I didn't do it. I did do it, but I will share with you, you may not be aware, I'm not 100% proud of that. And I'll be honest, among all our good friends, I felt embarrassed. I felt a little bad. And I know you didn't mean any harm. But I just want you to, but I treasure our relationship. I want you to know how I felt. All right, Steve,
it's much better.
What's your line? Go ahead, Steve.
I'm so sorry. You're absolutely right. It won't happen again.
That's it. All right. And then you go and say, all right, I really appreciate that, Steve. That's so big of you. I'm looking forward to getting together. I understand that Julie's having a Shabbos lunch coming up in a couple of weeks, and it'll be great to hang out with all the Chevra. So, you know what I'm saying? Do you see how I did that? You warm the person up. You rekindle that sense of relationship. I mentioned the issue as sort of like not a big deal. I brought up the issue as sort of like indirectly. You know, I mean, I talked about how he felt that I'm not trying to indict him. I'm not trying to indict Steve. Steve's a good guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm showing honor and respect. I'm not yelling. I'm being sweet. You know what I'm saying? So critical. Yeah. It can be done. It's not, but I want to say, this is not always so easy, obviously, but all right, let's go to the next one. Nancy Mgier was sitting in a staff meeting. Her good friend Andrea shared a solution to a vexing business problem that Nancy had told her the day before, and she was taking all the credit. This happens. The boss loved the idea. Nancy was stunned and burning with anger at Andrea. What must Nancy or Andrea do? How should they do it using the Rambam or and Dale Carnegie's advice? What does Nancy got to do?
So neither the Rambam nor Dale Carnegie say this, but I would suggest that Nancy could take a walk first and let her anger come down so she's not giving her Tocheach while angry.
100% correct. Now, the Rambam implies that because in order to be able to speak quietly and softly and making sure that you're speaking for them for their own benefit can only be accomplished if you're not seething in anger. If you are seething in anger, you cannot do this. In fact, if you try to do it, it's going to make everything much, much worse. You're just going to blow up the situation. So you got to be in a real calm place. So I could not agree with you more, Shayna. Very important. And I think the Rambam would agree with you 3,000% on that. So number one is take time to cool off. In fact, I would even suggest let it sit overnight. Okay. What else? All right. Okay. Now Nancy is calm and she's going to be back at work and she sees Andrea in her office by herself. What's her move?
Nancy.
So I'm going to be Andrea and you're going to be Shayna. You're going to be Nancy.
So I think Nancy should first like knock on the door, or if they use Slack, to send right. a message that says like, "Hey, do you have a couple of minutes? Can I come talk to you?" Just to make sure that she's not interrupting and that like everybody's calm, Andrea can focus. And then I would start with something like,
"Hold on, one second. Let me roll play back." Sure, Nancy. Sure, I got. I'm free for the next hour. Click, boom. All right, you slide. So Nancy, what's up?
So, hey, Andrea, I really love working with you. You're a great coworker, a great colleague. I love doing like the projects that we work on together. But when we talk or I share ideas with you, I'd really appreciate it if you would share credit or give credit where credit's due. Because that idea, I don't know if you remember, but in the meeting yesterday, you shared an idea that I had actually given to you the day before that meeting.
Okay, that was good, but I felt that's a little on the direct side. I think you pretty much went to the, you're a thief. So, you may want to say, I would have added in a few more. You added, you may not realize, but I would try to find other ways to like sort of soften it. I try to add a little more softening because I feel it's going to, you're not giving her much weight. In other words, Dale Carnegie, let the other person save face. There's no way for Andrea to save face here. You're basically saying, I told you an idea. You took it. You took the credit in front of me and you said nothing. So you could start off with like, Andrea, I must say, yesterday I was so confused. And I'm very curious to understand what occurred. And, you know, maybe it just slipped your mind, but we, the day before on Monday, we were schmoozing about this, the issue with the Johnson account and what needs to be done, blah, blah, blah. And you, and I shared with an idea. And it seemed to me that the idea that I shared with you was the idea that you presented in your own name with the boss, which, by the way, he really loved. You know what I'm saying? You got to, I'm saying by making it a little softer, by making it a little more indirecty, you got to more chance. Because if you're going to go right for the prosecutors, you know, I would even start off like, by the way, Andrea, you know, we have tremendous fun. And by the way, there's nobody here in the office that I rather, you know, have lunch with. It's so, you know, such a great way to change things up, to schmooze about things, and I really treasure our relationship. You know what I'm saying? You got to warm it up before you go into the, because you're going to be laying down a mat. So, you got to throw in, I treasure relationship. I'm a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit confused on me, not you. I'm a little curious what's happening. You know, giving the person way to not strike back. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just saying it has to be. Otherwise, as you see, this can get very heated very quickly. And instead of it being going well, it will actually be a disaster. So That's why, by the way, I would even role play it with myself or with a friend who's not involved in the situation. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not, you know what I mean? They can see if, am I being so mean? Is there anger coming through my voice? Is my word choice too prosecute, you know, am I sounding like a prosecuting attorney? Am I being mean? Okay. That's why this is a hard mitzvah. This is a mitzvah. It doesn't cost you a dime. Very hard. You know what I mean? This mitzvah is no less important than eating matzah at the Seder, davening, saying the Shema. You know, this is a legit one. All right, scenario number three. This was a good one. All right, Julie, you're up. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Chaim MGR agreed to go to dinner with Jake at the Wall Street Grill, which, by the way, is a fantastic, delicious restaurant in Lower Manhattan. As he's approaching the restaurant, after a long subway ride, he gets a text from Jake that he cannot make it because he just realized that he has a critical work event which he forgot to write down in his calendar. Of course, this is something that happens to Jake with Jake all the time. Chaim is hungry, angry, and frustrated with Jake. What must Chaim do? How should he do it using the Rambam Dale Carnegie's advice? Okay? So just to give you, Wall Street Grill is a very expensive restaurant. It's used for business meetings and very special occasions for couples or friends. It's not a place you're going to dine on your own. You'd feel super weird eating there by yourself. FYI. Okay, I'm not terrible, but I'm just saying, you know, saying it's a place where you're doing business, or it's celebratory, because if you're with two people, the bill will not be less than $200. I mean, unless you're like adding the, you know what I'm saying? It's that kind of place. You know what I'm saying? It's all right. And the food is good. I've been there. It's delicious. Anywho. All right. So you're Chaim. You're looking forward to a great time with your buddy Jake, and you've schlepped 30 minutes down to Lower Manhattan. You can see the ferry, and you get the text, not a call, the text that Jake cannot make it. Can you feel the frustration in that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, if Jake's a mensch, what should he automatically, if Jake went to mensch school, what should he immediately do? If I was coaching Jake, there are two things he should be doing.
Offer to pay for Chaim's dinner.
Yeah, I say, Chaim, first of all, don't text him, call him like a mensch, number one. Apologize, by the way, I'm going to, give me a minute, I'm going to speak to the maitre d', I'm giving my credit card. I want you to have the best possible dinner. This is my mistake. I messed up. In other words, if you make mistakes, we're all going to make mistakes. Rule one about when you did something wrong. Admit it 100% and no explanation, no lame excuse. Just say, if I'm Jake, Chaim, I messed up. I was stupid. I got to be at this work event or else it's going to be bad at my job. But I want to tell you like this. I want you to walk into the Wall Street Grill. You're going to order the best dinner you've had. I'm going to be calling my credit card to cover it. And I really apologize. My mistake, my foolishness, and that's it. That's how he would avoid the situation. But Jake's not so smart. Jake's not so sensitive. Jake is showing up in our scenario. He's Mr. Scenario number three. So now Chaim is like, he's messed over. Like, first of all, he's not going to spend, you know, $100 for a dinner for one when he's annoyed at his friend at Wall Street Grill. So he's, you know, he's going to go back and either go back home or go to a more inexpensive place and, you know, just be annoyed. Now it's 2 days later. How should he deal with his buddy Jake?
If I was Chaim, I would find a mutually agreed upon time to have a conversation with Jake.
Yep.
I would start with praise, how much you appreciate this friendship, and all the times they actually go to dinner or get together. But then I would just, you know, tactfully point out that there's been a number of times that there's been a cancellation and that he finds it, you know, very hurtful, and also, you know, it puts a dent in his schedule, and, you know, he also has like time constraints. And just to make him more aware of it, because sometimes people aren't aware how they're affecting other people.
Excellent. You know, he might say, oh, look, Jake, we've been friends for a decade. You know, I love you, buddy. You're a lot of fun. We have great times together. But I want to tell you, when I was, and I got your text when I was about to approach the restaurant, I just felt disrespected. I know it was not your intention. I know you're running around, you're doing a lot of stuff, and you know, some things seem to get away from you. But I felt bad. I felt embarrassed. I'm showing up to a restaurant, and you know, I slept, you know, 25 minutes on the subway, and stood up for a wonderful time together, looking forward to it. You know, I had a light lunch because I was going to have a big dinner, the old light lunch, big dinner option. And lo and behold, you know, you didn't show up. And I felt hurt by that. So, and pause, and that's it. Now, Jake, at that point should, of course, like, you know, be profusive and say, look, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I hope you find your heart to forgive me. If he says that, he should forgive him. But that's the deal. These are very common things. You know, we're all not perfect. We're all going to say hurtful things. We're all going to do insensitive things to our friends and family. But the terrorist says, don't ignore it. Don't not talk about it. Discuss it with your friend in a thoughtful, intelligent, respectful manner, and the relationship will be improved. And again, if Jake is a guy who's like a serial, so like you guys said, look, you can say next, look, Jake, I love you, but I know that your track record of actually showing up is not great, and I don't want to. I'm not booking a time with you where you may not be there. You know, you can say, you know, you call him out on his stuff. I said, look, you're a good guy, but the bottom line is, you're not a master right now of your scheduling, and things seem to crop up with you more than anybody else I know. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to be a friend with a person who is not treating you properly. There's no mitzvah, but you do have an obligation. If the person does hurt you, slight you, embarrass you, annoy you in a significant way, you got to be honest and open and honest about it, and allow that person to look into themselves and improve, and ask you for forgiveness. And that's how the Jewish people become a stronger people. It's not easy being, you know, it's not, friendship is hard. Friendship is hard. It takes work. This is the kind of work that it talks about. Owning the mistakes. Because when you have a relationship and people are honest, that, you know, when a person makes a mistake and they admit to it, and you see that they're improving and they're trying to get better, being more sensitive, so, you know, the relationships grow stronger and better. And that's what part of the reason why Hashem demanded us not to be ignore the slights or the harms that people do, but rather in a quiet, non-aggressive, non-embarrassing way, indirectly, affectionately point it out to them so they can improve. And that's the mitzvah. And the parsha is, the tocha is talking, is warning the Jewish people that if we're going to ignore and negate and degrade Hashem's Torah, Hashem runs the world. He has ways to remind us that we cannot stray from our mission. And that's the tocha. And just as God rebukes the Jewish people if we make mistakes, also when we make mistakes, and also if we make mistakes with freedom, we should be open and honest and not wait for the person to call us. We should call them. In other words, in all these scenarios, let's go back to the scenario with Nancy and Andrea. Andrea, if she had a little more self-awareness, said to Nancy, I want to apologize to you because it was your idea. I'm writing an email. I'm CCing you to the boss, sharing that, and to everybody else who was at the meeting, dear, you know, Mr. Johnson, I just want to share that the idea that I shared at yesterday's meeting was coming from Andrea's creativity. It was her idea, what she shared to me. I just want to, I was wrong not to make that clear at the meeting. And I want credit, should be credit where credit is due. And I'm honored to work with Nancy as a part of the team. And I think we all appreciate her. And I just want to make sure this is yet another reason to appreciate her. In other words, try to undo the damage. So what Andrea should put on her big girl dress and admit it and try to restore the problem. So if we make mistakes, we're going to make mistakes. A, damage control. B, apologize to the person if we did something wrong. Don't wait for them to come to us. We should go to them. And if a person comes to us, we should listen openly and not be defensive and listen to their critique in an open way. And when we're wrong, we should admit it. That's the goal. That's what the Torah wants. That's a good person. Torah wants to make us good people. That's a good person. And that's what the parsha really is pointing to on a national level. And there's a mitzvah that applies to on the personal level. So I wanted to share that tonight. Any questions? All right, great. All right, so Scott, I'll see you tomorrow night at MJ. Mm-hmm. And guys, have a great night. And until next week, all the best.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.